Hey, thank you so much for listening to Conversations with Paul Nielsen. This is Paul. I just wanted to thank you again for coming by and listening and giving me the opportunity to be able to do this every week. If you haven't already, go ahead and like the Facebook page, Conversations with Paul Nielsen. We'll kind of continue some of these conversations there. This week, what I've got is I've got my good friend Manny Marquez sitting in with me, and we're going to be talking about some pretty unique things and good things and things that really need to be discussed. We sit down and we talk about mental health. We also discuss psychedelics and really kind of why it's important to kind of live authentically and how he kind of came to that realization and some of the trials that he's been through and how he's kind of dealt with them. But until then, let's just kind of jump into that conversation with them and kind of go from there. Thanks.
It's like life is chaos. My life has always been chaotic, man. Mm-hmm. It's like my household, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, being raised in a home with a mother with undiagnosed mental health issues and a father as well. A very chaotic home, my minority household.
Yeah.
Where religion was supposed to be the cure.
Well, from what I've read, though, I mean, that's a lot of what Latin and African American, those cultures are very, they depend more on religion and things to.
And spirituality, right?
And spirituality to kind of fix the mental health and things, because that's kind of what they
were taught.
Yeah.
And I honestly think it almost comes from like a natural place to want to revert back to spirituality to find some sort of like grounding base for your mental health. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been co-opted and taken over by religion, by Christianity. And I think, like, me, myself, and so far, it could change, obviously, but my mental health has been more, like, I've been better mm-hmm. just by accepting, like, ancestral type of, you know, beliefs and spirituality as opposed to Christianity.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody's got to have their beliefs.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it helps in so many different ways.
I think, beliefs are super important. I think faith is important to live a happy life, honestly.
I disagree.
See, okay.
Because when I left religion, I left religion.
So did I for a while.
And I left God, and I left everything. And my biggest part of it is, sorry, Mom, I know you listen.
Oh, yes.
And I know we've had this conversation, Mom. But
my mom and I have been going on about this for a minute. Yeah.
But for me, when I left, there was, it made no sense for me to
hold on to that beliefs.
Well, not only that, but say, hey, yeah, I believe in this book. Mm-hmm. Wait, no, this book is not true anymore. This isn't okay. This is wrong. Oh, but this book over here,
the Bible,
this is okay. Mm. This is perfectly fine. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
If I was going to do it, I was going to leave. And I couldn't bring myself to have faith in something without any type of proof.
Oh, for sure. That makes sense.
And that's kind of where I was, where I'm at. And I started looking at just God in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what makes the God that the Christian God?
White God.
White God, brown God. I don't care what kind of color God is.
Christian God in America is white.
Yeah. I mean, the Christian God in Middle East is brown, I'm sure.
In South America, he's white too. That's
weird.
It's a whole complex that we could dive into about how religion and Christianity with a white God, with a white Jesus, is actually very unhealthy for the colored mind.
Well, Jesus Christ was Middle Eastern.
Yeah. He walked in the sun. Brown. Yeah, he was in the sun all day, a preacher. Yeah.
He was brown.
Yeah, he would have been my color or darker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So my thoughts went to, why is this Christian God any better than Zeus?
Right. No, I agree. I completely agree. Yeah.
And Zeus was, and all these Greek gods and Roman gods mm-hmm. and things, and I don't even remember which one Zeus was. I think it was Greek.
Yeah, Zeus is Greek. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, we're taught Greek. Yeah.
In Greek mythology.
Yeah, that's what we're taught in the States.
There was
the Greek pantheon.
I was taught the Roman. The Roman one, too?
I learned the Roman one, but that one didn't stick with me. Like, no. Hercules is Greek because of movies and stuff, and Thor is Greek, Norse. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I started looking at every one of these gods.
For sure.
In every religion, mm-hmm. from my perspective, was to explain something that we didn't understand.
Oh, for sure.
So when you say, I think you need to have God and religion and things, and maybe not religion, but spirituality.
Spirituality has been helpful. Like I also stepped away from the church, and I find myself more of a, like, culturally, I was raised in the LDS church. I was raised Mormon. I served a mission, got married in the temple, etc. Right?
All those things.
Yeah. So that is culturally part of who I am.
Yeah.
Like, I know how to speak in the semi-educated way because of the church, because of my mission. And, you know, like, it has blessed my life in many ways.
Yeah. I mean, I gained a lot out of it.
Exactly. When I was... And I'm going to go, I still have friends in Chile that I want to visit and help push their revolution forward. So it's crazy that we're still friends, that they've seen me evolve from the super Mormon kid to what I am now, which isn't that. But for me, spirituality means, like, having faith in, I guess, at the most basic level, in oneself.
Yeah.
And in one's ability to manifest our own reality, if that makes sense. Whether you call that faith in yourself, whether you call that grit, whether you just call that motivation in yourself, motivation for your family, I personally label it as spirituality. And what's helped me is, like, I consider myself more of a, at first I was agnostic, not really sure if God existed, nor here nor there with the idea.
Yeah.
But now I find myself more pantheistic. I sort of went into that worldview where everything is interconnected, and whether we're aware or not, there's a layer of something I don't understand. So that's what pantheism meant to me, like, God is nature.
Okay.
And then I started messing around with psychedelics heavily. After I got my life threatened a few times, I decided that if I was ever going to do psychedelics, I kept thinking about the perfect sentence setting because I read about it. There's a John Hopkins study about psilocybin mushrooms helping with depression. There's all these studies about LSD helping people with PTSD and stuff. So I was like, you know, I'm scared of pharmaceuticals. I don't want to mess with, like, Prozac, Xanax, anything like that. But I will mess with hallucinogens.
So is the hallucinogens different than the Prozac? And how is it different?
Very much different. So, like...
Because I don't dabble in any of it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like to take medication prescribed or otherwise unless I absolutely have to.
Yeah, same. You know, so one of my demons with my mental health is suicide ideation, which basically means, like, planning on killing myself.
Yeah.
And then depending on how depressed I've gotten in the past, I've, you know, inch forward with that more so than I'd like to. But so different medications that I've seen friends take for, you know,
like, a lot of the
emotional things are, like, Wellbutrin, Xanax, Prozac, things like that.
And they all can
have incredible
that suicidal thoughts and things.
Suicidal thoughts,
I got you.
And plus the fact that I do have addictive personalities in the family, and I myself have had, you know, addiction issues in the past that I might battle with or whatnot. I didn't want to get on anything
that
I could possibly hurt myself with. So,
why not a little more holistic stuff? I mean, not only just the hallucinogens, but also
cannabis.
I mean, all that stuff is, you know, holistic. Yeah. It's coming from nature and things. What I mean, holistic. Going into a therapist talking through those things. Are you doing something like that as well?
So I went to therapy with my ex-wife for about 3 years, almost four. So it was personal counseling as well as marriage counseling to try to work it out. I found it incredibly useful for me to understand, like, where my trauma stems from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, a lot of it, I believe, is based in, like, early childhood for me. Abandonment issues, right? So...
we were talking a little bit about earlier, just about us kind of both being kind of empaths and fixers and things.
I think
a lot of that stems from early childhood.
Yeah, being one, those, be a people pleaser.
Having experiences in our childhood that stems from that. And I think once we recognize where that comes from, then we can start working on fixing behaviors.
And
having better boundaries.
Boundaries, better coping mechanisms. Yeah, for sure. So, like, the suicide ideation for me went away after a psilocybin trip. My grandfather just died, and my family, my second grandfather, the father of my mother, he died. And his story is crazy. Like, he's the son of a prostitute.
Wow.
We don't know his actual father. He never grew up with his father, so he grew up with the love of everyone. Like, he was a very unjudgmental man. Until the day he died, until the day he was able to, he was a very... Spanish, the word would be mujeriego, which means womanizer.
Okay.
Yeah, him and the ladies of the night got along very well. I mean, he was raised in
environment.
We have I have an aunt that's I think right now she's 17.
Really?
Yeah, one of his kids. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's crazy to think about.
Yeah, really crazy to think.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, obviously the reason I bring that up is I believe, and they've done studies, and I've read about studies like with mice, how intergenerational trauma can be passed on, or how trauma can be passed down through generations.
I've read that study.
Yeah, so it's something to think about, right? So my grandfather comes from that. He drank tequila for the longest time. He would drive around with a Coke bottle mixed with half Coke, half tequila. And he was like, jeez. When I was a kid, I remember I was like, hey, can I have some of your soda? He was like, no, son, this is for grandpa. He's like, why do you need this? He's like, this is from a cold. You don't have a cold? He's like, exactly. He's like, this keeps it away.
Exactly, that's why.
Yeah. And then when he got older, he stopped drinking or whatever. But so that addictive personality. My grandmother's incredibly native on my mother's side. But anyway, so when my grandfather died, I started questioning, like, you know, the purpose of it all, right?
Yeah.
And I decided I was going to finally take a smallish dose of mushrooms. So I did. And it was incredibly beneficial. Mm-hmm. It took away the suicide ideation. Before that, I was walking around Walmart buying shit to gas myself.
Jeez.
And then after that, yeah, it's whatever, man. It's just life. After that, after the mushroom trip, I was more accepting of my reality. Mm-hmm. Even though it wasn't exactly where I wanted to be, and even though I felt great shame because of, you know, like socially where I was, you know, having a home, having multiple new cars, right? Or, you know, like, and then dropping down to having to live with my parents.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you know, falling from grace in a sense, right? In my culture, when a man makes it, he buys a house, he buys cars, and he's, you know, like, it's a very machista type of house, you know, like, culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was doing that whole provider role super well. And then after, like, everything went sideways,
I stopped.
And then, the depression hit hard.
Do you think that's because it stopped and you just, your identity was wrapped up into that and you just didn't know what to go or where to go from there at that point? Or
No, I don't know if my identity was wrapped up in that. I mean, it probably was a lot of it, you know, wanting to be a provider. Just like my father.
Yeah.
You know? And then losing a house, losing a family, right? Like, I didn't get married and have children with this woman
to lose it.
To lose it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, so it's a painful process.
I lived in Arizona. And while I was in Arizona, my ex-wife and I, we actually had two homes at the same time. Damn. We rented one out. We lived in one. And, you know, 2008 hit and things happened, and we lost everything. Yeah. We lost all of it, you know. And then we ended up having to moved up to Utah because my youngest son, we knew he was going to have Down syndrome, and he also had a very
uncle with Down syndrome.
Greatest people in the world.
Yeah, super loving man.
Yeah,
he has my family tells stories about how he can see somebody's heart.
Really?
Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No,
you're saying
that's interesting.
Yeah,
go on about that.
Yeah. You moved to Utah.
Yeah, because he had a heart issue, and Primary Children's up here was the best in the Western United States for cardiac issues for pediatrics. So he moved up here.
Yeah. They're also super good for eye issues. I have a nephew with glaucoma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just an all-around great, great hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I know for cardiac, pediatric cardiology, it's top 20 in the country or something like that.
Man.
It's incredible.
It's really good, yeah.
Yeah. It was either come here or back to Los Angeles
To
UCLA, and I wasn't going to battle that. That's just ridiculous.
California sucks.
I love it, though. I love it.
I'm from Texas, man.
Yeah, I'm from Southern California. I love it.
You know, when it's one of those things where it's like Texans love Texas.
Oh, yeah.
And hate California.
No, come on. Let's be real. People from Texas love Texas and hate everywhere else.
That's true, yeah. It's a very, very prideful state.
It is.
And I love it.
They've got great pride in their country.
In their country.
In their own little republic.
Yeah, man, in the Republic of Texas. Yes, sir. So, yeah, my the youngest son on my maternal grandparents' side has Down syndrome.
Yeah.
He might have autism as well. he was born special, and then he accidentally there was a tragic accident where he was run over, and then his symptoms worsened because his head was squished. But the story my family tells about how he could sense people's hearts is when he met my father, and he met. So my mother has a bunch of siblings, like most Mexican farmer families do. But my mom and her sister both were dating men at the time, mm-hmm. right? And they invited both of them to come meet with their parents so they could just, you know, get along with them.
Yeah.
Or just talk to them.
As you normally do.
Yeah. And so my grandmother was LDS, but very inactive, drank and smoked until she could. It, like, ultimately killed her.
Yeah.
She died of lung cancer, but she was LDS, so she would still pray over food.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were praying, my uncle, his name is Salvador, which means savior. His nickname is Chava, which is just, like, the nickname. He would move the plates around. Because they would serve, like, the other guy, because he was, like, he'd been in the family longer.
Yeah.
And my dad was just the new guy. So they'd serve him food. They'd pray. My father wouldn't have any food. And my uncle would be like, nope. And, like, move stuff around. He really didn't like that uncle.
Okay.
And then later on in life, that uncle beat the crap out of my family. And, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he wasn't a good person. But so that's why. Very kind-hearted individual. Very.
Well, I think
they see things that we don't. And it sounds so cliche, but...
No. They're childlike.
Yeah.
I mean...
They're pure.
My little one is 9.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the mentality of a 18-month, maybe 2.5-year-old. Which is really annoying sometimes because he does those same things.
Yeah.
Like getting into things and knocking things over, being stubborn, and he just doesn't care what you say.
Yeah.
He's just going to do it because he can.
He wants to, yeah.
But in the same aspects... Because they've got that younger mentality, they're innocent.
Yeah.
And they see things as they are, and they're not jaded like you and I are, just mm-hmm. growing up and not having that. And because they're not jaded, they're always happy, they're always kind, they're just loving, because they're not jaded by the world.
Yeah.
So they can see those things that
are positive.
Most of us can't.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not jaded about it. They're not just... done with and cynical.
That reminded me of the movie Glass.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah, where Mr. Glass is talking to...
Have I seen that one?
What's his name? The little boy from the multiple personalities.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know Glass, where he fights the man in the rain or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's talking to... What's his name, the little boy? His name is Sedgwick? Edgwick?
The
9-year-old?
Yeah, the 9-year-old. I think it's Sedgwick.
Sedgwick, yeah. And he says, like, what's my special power? And Mr. Glass or Glass tells him, he's like, you see, I forget how he puts it, but he's basically like, you're a child, right? You see things for how they are. Mm-hmm. You have the mind of a child, right? And so you're not corrupted.
Yeah. Well, it is just not corrupted.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, I wish I could be like my kid, my little one, more because they just... happy and honest and no matter what's going on, he's going to see the good in things.
It's true.
It'd be an amazing way to live.
I don't know, man, life sucks in general. Like, you can get all depressive.
I
do believe it's about perspective, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's perspective and attitude.
It really is, you know. Like, we can listen to stories about how people pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, and
mm-hmm.
we can also listen to stories about angry people that feel that the world is unjust.
Mm-hmm.
But I think attitude makes a lot of it, and in the end, a bad attitude is not going to help you get out of a bad situation.
No, there's a quote that I had heard a while ago. Brené Brown, do you know who that is?
No.
She's a psychologist. She studies vulnerability and shame. That's what she... That's her thing of study. So imagine sitting next to her on a plane.
That's heavy.
You know? What do you study? What do you do for it? Well, I study shame.
I study shame in society.
Just shuts people down. That's great.
And vulnerability.
Just shame within themselves and vulnerability.
Yeah.
But she was doing an interview with... Well, what is his name? English guy.
Richard Brandt.
Brandt, yeah.
Yeah, last name Brandt.
Yeah.
Has long hair.
Long hair, English.
Used to be a heroin addict.
Yeah.
Okay, cool, yeah.
Or
opium addict, not heroin.
What is his name? It's going to bother me. But anyway.
Brand, yeah. Last name, Brand. Long hair.
Yeah. He was interviewing Brene Brown, and she had said, fear that is not transformed will be transmitted.
Okay.
And you can take fear out and put anger. You can put any of those type of emotions in there. But if you don't transform it into something good, it's going to be transmitted out.
Yeah,
you got to change it.
You project it, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, we can be angry, we can be upset, we can do all those things, but what are we going to do with it?
Right, exactly.
You know, are we going to let us eat us alive and just be miserable, or are we going to go ahead and change and do something with it to promote change?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
It's about doing something.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you got to do something with it. Let's get back to kind of what we were talking about with the mental illness. I mean, it's...
So, yeah, mental illness. So, yeah, I think last thing I was saying about it is I went to therapy for a couple of years with Megan, my ex-wife, and it was super beneficial. I kept studying, like, psychology on my own through just different self-help books, audiobooks, and, like, videos and stuff like that. And I feel like I've been able to manage a lot of my like, outbursts. I'm triggered a lot less.
Good.
And I don't have those reactionary type of moments anymore. And if I find myself overwhelmed, I just avoid all drama at all costs. That's probably a good idea. Yeah. And so, yeah. And then recently, I don't know if you've noticed a big character change in how I, like, carry myself online.
Yeah.
I took a very big dose of psilocybin mushrooms because a whole bunch of stuff was happening in life. You know, like, mental health issues, I think, in colored communities are overlooked and not properly addressed in our communities because of our societal structure that can be very patriarchal and machista.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Yeah, so, yeah, there were some issues going on at home, and I was like, you know what? I keep thinking about the perfect set and setting to do this, and my life has just been so chaotic. I've been close to death a few times without even trying, so... There's no perfect time for this, so I just need to do it now or I'm going to never do it, right? And I wound up taking over 13 grams of psilocybin mushrooms, which acted like a DMT-type trip. And
explain that, because I don't know what that is.
DMT is a chemical created in all living things.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, humans have it in their pineal gland. It's said to be released, like it floods the brain whenever you die. Hippies and other type of people believe that that chemical is a gateway to another dimension.
Okay.
So, psilocybin, and as well as acid, but DMT is the strongest one, can help you have very profound spiritual experiences that feel incredibly real, where you speak to entities, and they communicate with you. Whenever you take a large enough dose of psilocybin, you communicate with other beings.
Okay.
And it's a common experience with people. Huh. It's incredibly weird.
It's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. So,
we'll learn more about that.
A heroic dose is considered 7 grams. I wound up taking 13, almost doubled it, because I was like, hey, I'm super depressed. What's going to happen? I'm not going to die. Ultimately, I thought I wound up dying. Yeah, in the trip, I was like, oh shit, I'm dead. I killed myself. At one point, I was having trouble breathing. I was like, oh man, I'm having an allergic reaction. I'm the first motherfucker that's going to die from this. And here I am, like, thinking I'm dying in a hotel room. But it wound up being an incredibly spiritual experience where I was tested and tried. And I asked to be more patient and less reactive. And, whatever I met helped me do that by treating me horribly.
By treating you horribly.
Yeah. After this conversation, you should look up machine elves and jesters. That's what they're called. I met one.
Okay.
He berated me with insults. Because I showed up, so I'm going to go into the experience, whatever.
Yeah.
So I showed up in this, like, DMT-like world, in this, like, other universe. I think I'm dead at this point. My body's acting like it's dead, and I don't feel human anymore. And I'm in the presence of this thing, and it asked me, like, without words, like, what are you doing here? I say,
Without words, I mean, it was, like, telepathically?
Yeah, telepathically, yeah.
Okay.
Like, it was asking me through, yeah. We communicated without words. It was weird.
Yeah.
And it was like, what are you doing here? I don't know, bro. I just threw myself here. Now that I'm here, can you try to help me fix myself?
Let's just get right to the point.
Yeah, it's like, this is what I'm doing here, dog. I'm hella depressed and life sucks. So help me be less reactive. And he's like, are you sure? And then he's like, okay, you want to be less reactive? And it felt like whatever it was, he was a yellow jester. And he's like, okay, you want more patience? You want to be less reactive? Don't react. And then he just proceeded to treat me like garbage.
Wow.
And at one point, I experienced ego death. And I was like, fuck, I'm garbage. My body's going to die one day and I'm just going to return to the earth.
Yeah.
Like, death is an experience we're all going to go through. I have to accept it. And so I accepted my eventual death. And I accepted my position as earth, dirt.
Yeah.
And, you know, on this planet. And then I sort of blacked out in that world and saw some other things. And I woke up and I wasn't dead.
No, you're not dead because you're sitting with me. Yeah.
You're not dead.
I know you're not dead.
So it was a very life-changing experience. I thought I died. I met something that treated me like garbage but helped me be less reactive.
Right.
And then I was saved by something later on.
So you mentioned that you came to terms with your own death.
Yeah, I came to terms with my own mortality.
Your own mortality. How was physical that mortality. Helped? Or has it helped?
Yeah, it's helped immensely.
And why? Why do you think that's helped?
So they've done studies with John Hopkins. Well, like, I keep repeating that because I don't want people to think I'm just a druggie, but they've done
studies. Okay. You cite it. Yeah. I mean, it gives credibility.
John Hopkins studies, as well as other studies with cancer patients and psilocybin, have shown that terminally ill patients that are approaching death find incredible benefit from having a psychedelic experience with psilocybin and accepting the fact that their body will die one day.
Yeah.
Because it is a very spiritual experience that leads to almost otherworldly type of communication, it gives hope that this mundane world that we're in is not just it. And it helps build on that connection to
something bigger.
Something bigger. That's why I find myself no longer being atheist. I never really was. At most, I was agnostic. But I find myself being pantheistic and spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the society we live in now has co-opted a lot of spirituality and repackaged it in false religions.
Oh, yeah.
But there's more to our human experience than just what we live.
Mm-hmm. So do you find that your attitudes are... attitudes or... Not attitudes, but just the outlook on life, has it changed for you? Because
yes, tremendously. Yeah,
because you don't. I'm assuming you don't fear death at this point.
I want to live. Yeah, I don't want to die. I don't want to get killed. But
no. But you're aware that you're going to die.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And that there's nothing that you're going to do to stop
exactly,
that.
Exactly, it's
going
to happen.
So
there's only one kind of people in this world. It's people who die.
Yeah. Yeah. I found that just. Even just with myself. I know I'm going to die. I don't care.
Yeah. Well, so it's helped me be more authentic. After I experienced that, you know, ego death is what some call it, I decided that my life is mine. And I'm not going to live it according to anybody else's societal shame structure. And I'm going to be who I want to be. I'm going to express every idea that I want to express, no matter who it offends. Because there's no other reason, or there's no, in my head at this point, why am I going to continue living if I'm not going to be myself? No matter if it rubs people the wrong way, I could care less. My whole life I've been a shadow and like a people pleaser, and now it's like, nah, fuck all y'all, this is my life and I'm gonna live it how I want. And either you're gonna love me and respect it, or you're gonna call me crazy. You were already calling me crazy when I was bowing my head, so whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what I was getting at. Is how has this changed you as a person? And you said you want to live more authentically.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think it's incredibly important. Incredibly important. You know Ewan?
Yeah, I know Ewan.
I had him in a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that's one podcast, or one, not podcast, one episode that I'm incredibly interested in listening to whenever I do listen.
I appreciate that. but that's something he said. We were talking about his transitioning.
For sure.
And he had
shout out to Ewan. Much love.
He doesn't listen either.
God damn it, Ewan.
He hasn't even listened to the interview yet.
I'll listen to my own just because I'm a narcissistic asshole.
Yeah, it's okay. You should. It's fun. I listen to every time I record when I listen to one.
Do you ever find yourself just hating your own voice?
No.
Okay. No. Super quick.
Well, here's the deal. I've worked in call centers for 20 years.
Yeah, that's true.
So a big part of that is listening to calls and listening to your voice and hearing it. And everybody hates hearing their own voice.
Yeah.
I just don't care anymore. Yeah. I know what I sound like. I know when I'm on the phone, I sound like a 12-year-old girl. It's okay.
That's hot, bro.
No, it's not.
No, you're right. You're right. The joke is supposed to be a fucking joke. You're right, 100%.
Yeah, I get you, but okay. Still.
Fuck, edit that out. Goddamn. Anyways, so you and his transition.
Yeah, and...
And being authentic, right?
We were talking about how difficult that is, and some people choose not to be to transition and kind of live that life. Mm. And it was something along those lines, and he says... The only choice that there is with somebody that's gay or trans or lesbian is the choice to live authentically.
Yeah, not on the, what's the right word? There's so many different terms. That's not, sexuality spectrum.
The Kinsey scale.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, so it's, his whole point was... The only choice that somebody has is to live authentically.
Binary. Okay. Yeah. Is the word I was looking for.
Binary, okay.
Damn. Yeah, because I don't consider binary. Myself a binary type of male, but it's whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, his whole point was the only choice that somebody has is to live authentically or not.
Exactly.
And that's across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if something like this helps you live authentically, mm-hmm. more power to you.
Yeah, it did. Yep. And it has, and it'll continue to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's something, especially because, like... Mexicans and native peoples have been using psilocybin mushrooms as medicine for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's still used as medicine in Oaxaca. American music, like the Beatles, has been influenced by a medicinal shaman woman that works with psilocybin in Oaxaca, Mexico. So literally, our people, my people, have been using this medicine to affect change in the world through music.
Mm-hmm. I know the Beatles was more Middle Eastern. And using it in that region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and acid was super big for the Beatles, right? Like, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds is all about dropping acid and staring at the sky.
It's about John Lennon's little girl. Come on.
It's about what?
John Lennon's little girl, Lucy.
No, it's not. It's about dropping acid and staring at the sky. Marmalade skies. Yeah.
I know. No, I mean, the story why they went that route? Versus, like, the Middle Eastern, that spiritual route versus the hippie route?
I'm not sure I follow. Like, what do you mean Middle Eastern? Like,
like the shaman and kind of what you're talking about, going that direction versus where a lot of the people in the 60s, especially the music, they were going more towards, like, the hippie route.
Oh, right, with, like, dropping acid and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they were being more spiritual and going that route and things. That's why George Harrison played a lot of the sitar later on and things. But it's because they went to... Haight Ashbury in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if you're familiar with the area.
No.
That's the big hippie mecca.
Where is this again?
In San Francisco. It's two streets, Haight and Ashbury.
Okay.
And they
toured it. I bet you I can find some psilocybin there.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
I can find it here. It's
oh, yeah. Here. It's I've been there.
Okay.
And it's, from what I understand, it really hasn't changed much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's changed.
But yeah, for sure.
But it's same type of vibe. And I thought it was a neat vibe, but it was incredibly dirty and incredibly just depressing and just people homeless just on the streets and things along those lines. And it kind of turned the Beatles off. So that's why they went more towards that spiritual realm opposed to the free love and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the free love. And I don't know, man. I think acid, I've done my fair share of acid recently as well. And I prefer psilocybin. I feel it's more of a... It can tend to become a bad trip because you're not as in control. With acid, you're a little bit more in control of the trip.
Yeah.
With psilocybin, it's going to take you where it wants to take you. And it doesn't care what you want.
Is it because subconsciously...
It just acts different in the body.
It just wants... So,
Oaxacan people, Native American people in Mexico that work with... Hongos that work with mushrooms call them little children, call them little helpers, call them little teachers, right? They believe that the mushrooms have spirits in them that have lessons that teach us.
Okay.
And those spirits or that energy or whether we want to get skeptical, the compounds, the specific breakdown of the compounds in the mushrooms isn't as controllable as a pharmaceutically or synthetically created acid.
Yeah. I really understand that. I mean, it's a natural thing. It's wild, it may not be able to...
Yeah, Terrence McKenna is one of my, like, gurus I follow. Mm-hmm. And throughout his life, he had very many hallucinogenic trips.
My thinking, and again, I've never done any of that, is that it releases something in the brain to help you unlock your subconscious.
Yeah, for sure. It connects you to your subconscious in a very deep way.
So
it acts like, so they've done studies on Big Think with acid and doing MRI scans, mm-hmm. and they see, the studies have shown that people that are taking acid, their brain acts more like the brain of a child. It is more interconnected than before, and that's why you're able to make abstract connections to ideas that you've never been able to make before. That's why San Francisco loves acid, because they're able to innovate on it. And mushrooms are the same, but
it works
a little bit more wild.
Yeah,
it's a wild bronco. It's not going to be
it's not as controlled.
Yeah, it's not as controlled. So if you have something in the back of your subconscious that you have been suppressing, mushrooms are going to punch you in the dick.
Well, I think that's probably.
Yeah,
it kind of goes into your experience.
My experience, it's like,
is that you had that deep in your subconscious that you wanted to do that, and you just couldn't figure out how to get it.
Yeah.
Be more,
you know, stoic,
patient.
Yeah, patient.
And so when you came into this realm, and this whether gesture is just railing on you
mm-hmm.
and telling you not to react.
Mm-hmm.
You knew that's kind of what you needed subconsciously to be able to figure out that, I can take all this abuse
mm-hmm.
and I don't have to react.
Yeah, I don't have to react. The power, my power is not reacting, right? And it's a weird way to phrase it, but, like, I don't have control over the world and how it'll berate me. But I do have control on how I react.
Exactly.
And, that experience was life-changing for sure. And whoever's out there and is incredibly depressed, before you kill yourself, drop a ton of mushrooms. And tell me what happens. You're never going to regret it.
Yeah.
Your family might hate you afterwards, because you'll just be I just became a super direct, authentic person, which might be considered sort of rude.
I think there's a difference. I think there's a line there where you can be authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And still
be respectful.
Be respectful.
Yeah. No, for sure. You know, and I, because this is a new realm for me.
You've got to figure out what that's at for.
And so, I'm just finding it, and unfortunately, that means stepping on a lot of toes.
Yeah.
And
I think when I got divorced, and it's been, 6 years.
Oh wow.
I swung way to the side of
pendulum,
being authentic and genuine, and it's sometimes it was a little too much.
Yeah.
And I kind of had to learn to swing that pendulum back, be a little more in the exactly middle, not share decided. So much all up front, all at once.
I don't know, man.
But still be open for people that want it.
In 100 years, my man, we're all going to be dead.
I'm going to be alive.
Shut up. Calm down.
I'm going to be 140.
Are you going to be drinking the blood of children?
If that's what it takes.
That's what the British are doing.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. I mean, we eat eggs. Right? Anyways, weird subjects. No. But
blood of children.
The blood of children. It's weird conspiracy theories you find online.
That's weird.
It really is, guy. It really is. Yeah, there's weird conspiracy theories out there about how, like, the queen stays young forever and it's through child sacrifice.
No, I'm sorry. I've seen the queen. On TV, not like in person.
Oh, okay.
But because I've never been to England.
Okay.
I want to go.
Yeah,
she's old.
She'd probably eat your soul.
Probably.
Yeah.
Oh, no, because I'm not a child.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
So I'll be good.
Yeah, conspiracy theories, man, there's so many out there. But I agree. I honestly think, obviously, you have to find the right balance. I carry a necklace with me that is a Mayan symbol. It's called the Hanubka. It's considered the Mayan yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
It means the one true God. It also can take representations of as above, so below. Mm-hmm. Basically, yin and yang balance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, it's about finding that balance. And then when you decide to become incredibly authentic, it's just about learning new boundaries, right? I was never taught how to be authentic and have boundaries. So now it's a whole new learning process.
I think that's...
No, man, there are some people that were...
I think that's just men in general. But, I mean, we were, as boys, we were never taught to be authentic and vulnerable. Suck it up, be a man. Don't cry, mm-hmm. don't show emotion, yeah. don't let them see a yeah. sweat, if you will, yeah. you know, these type of things. And we were never taught that it's okay to show emotions. It's okay to be, you know, upset. It's okay yeah. to be disappointed.
Mexicans are.
Suck it up.
Chicanos are, but we do that through drinking and drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Mexican men get emotional after they've had a few beers.
Yeah.
And that's like societal. It's like accepted. Like, what's going on with that guy? Oh, he's just emotional. So he's drunk and he's crying with his friends. Mm-hmm. So our culture has accepted emotional moments from men whenever they're incredibly inebriated. And that usually leads to like other things.
But it's an excuse, right?
Yeah, it's an excuse.
Excuse, oh, he's just drunk.
Yeah.
He's not, he's emotional because he's drunk.
Yeah, exactly.
But once they're sober.
Yeah, suck it
up. No, suck it up.
Yeah, be a man.
Be a man.
Yeah.
And
we excuse that when you were inebriated, but now that you're sober, don't cry.
Yeah. And it should be accepted.
Yeah, I agree.
Whether you're inebriated or not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm still going to tell you to suck it up, but still, that's just me.
That's funny.
My sons are going to be just messed up.
That's funny. Hey, my kids.
Son, be vulnerable, but suck it up.
Be vulnerable, but don't be a bitch. That's what my brother would say.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, freaking ghetto language sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, my father I'm very similar to him in many ways, obviously. He did raise me with the idea of, like, vulnerability is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then other people in life use that vulnerability.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, that's good that you had that.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Honestly, my familial culture at home was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was raised, like, with a father that wasn't overly machista, overly patriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
Patriarchal. Like, in Mexican homes, some homes, the women don't sit down and eat with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
They serve you.
Yeah.
And they, you know, heat tortillas and they're basically there to serve.
Yeah.
And my father didn't like that idea. So he would we would share responsibilities of the house.
Good.
So like it's progress, right? So my mother would sit down and stuff like that. So it wasn't very traditional, but it was progress, you know, mm-hmm. progress is made by little tiny steps. Also my mother, even though we come from a very cowtown type of state in Mexico, very farmerish, very hickish in that way, I guess is the only way I can explain it.
Ranch
lifestyle, very there's a lot of gay men there, and it's very culturally accepted.
Really?
Yeah, it's odd. It's a very paradoxical sort of idea. My mother had gay friends that she would defend.
And never even imagine that.
Right? And then my father, who was a very jealous kind of man whenever, like, men would approach his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they had a friend that they grew up with that everyone knew was gay. And as a child, I was like, yo, why is my dad not caring that Hector's dancing with my mom? Like,
yeah.
And then later on as a man, it's like, oh, it's because your dad knew he was gay.
Yeah.
And, so my dad wouldn't care if they were dancing. He's like, man, he's a buddy. It's all right.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, very... Like, progress is made that way, right?
That's good. Because wow, this conversation is going everywhere. You take that, where it's widely accepted in that
region
that your family's from, versus the ranch and the farmland and things here in the United States.
Yeah.
100% completely different.
Yeah.
You know, that's just...
Cracky voice and everything.
Yeah, we're going to go and drag them through the fields.
Yeah.
And kill them. And I mean, that. How many years ago was that? It happened in Wyoming, what, 10, 15 years ago, that gay kid was
ended up
killed over in Wyoming?
Isn't it still legal here to do, like, electroshock therapy under BYU studies?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's something, yeah. Utah also has a very high suicide rate among boys.
Yeah.
Which, you know, sort of, like, ties back into the whole idea of, like, mental health issues in colored communities.
Yeah.
Like, there's an NPR article I want to talk about how suicide rates in Greenland among boys and men are super high. When I was in Idaho Falls, when I was driving back, I stopped by the Fort Hall Res, and I saw signs specifically targeted at Native American men that were like, if you're thinking about suicide, call this number.
Yeah.
Also, black men kill themselves at an alarming rate. Also, Chicanos, Mexicans, we self-destruct a lot, and suicide is pretty normal amongst our people. Why? So why?
Why do you think that is?
I personally think it's because of we don't. Oh wow, that's a really big question. I think culturally we have a need for brotherhood, and in the society that we live in, brotherhood is not seen as manly and it's not accepted. So instead of like suffering together with a brother like we would have back in the day when we were hunter-gatherers, we would go out there, and even though I'd be emotional and my brother's colder than I am, we would hunt together.
Sure.
And we would, you know, work together towards a common goal, and we would build a bond of brotherhood, right? I'd be known as the emotional guy, my brother might be known as the colder guy, right?
Yeah.
But there was a sense of
belonging,
yeah, and that's been ripped away from our culture. And it's been replaced by a white culture that's killing us.
You think that's just been ripped away by
whites?
Not just whites, but for everybody.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I mean, everybody.
I mean, yeah, but it's affecting colored people in a higher rate. Yeah, because we don't. Our societies and our cultures don't accept going to therapy.
And how do we get back to get to? How do we change that? Because I think that's something that could definitely help. I mean, I'm a huge proponent of it. I mean, I've been going for the last 2.5 years, and it's been fantastic for me. And you've had great experiences about it. And how do we change that within that culture? I mean, is it an education thing?
It is an education thing. It's like just having these kinds of conversations where, you know, I admitted to a lot of, you know, things that I've struggled with.
Yeah.
And letting people know that they aren't alone. There's a reason why black, brown, red, you know, colored men are killing themselves. It's because we feel isolated, we feel misunderstood, and we feel like we don't belong in the society and the culture that we have. And then when we try to fix it and approach it with our elders, we feel ignored. So what we do is we self-medicate through drugs, and ultimately, when the void is big enough, we just kill ourselves.
Yeah. So we got to figure out something that closes that void, not let it get big enough. I mean, maybe that's sitting down with the elders, you know?
Yeah, sitting down with the elders and dropping mushrooms with them.
If that's what it takes, I suppose.
Yeah, no, like Native American cultures, as well as like certain black African cultures, even LDS cultures, we all have rites of passage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we all have ceremonial things, and I think we need to return back to that ceremonial brotherhood bonding type of experience, with or without psychedelics. I think would be beneficial.
Yeah, we need to get back to our roots.
Yeah, absolutely. Back to our roots.
Regardless of what that is, hold the things that are sacred in our lives and our families sacred again.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know,
and have something to hold on to, and have these relationships and these brotherhoods. I think it's incredibly important that men have other men that we can
support each other. Yeah, exactly.
And
women. Paul.
I know you do.
Thanks.
I know. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I mean, women do it.
Yeah, they fucking do.
And it's widely accepted that women can support each other and have girls' nights and be emotional and work things out. But, I mean, guys have, like, bro nights or whatever, but it's more about
Laughing and
causing havoc
and
having a good time and drinking too much
than addressing
issues that maybe we're all facing.
Yeah, we both have a common friend or a common acquaintance that we worked with at a previous job that I think is a very emotional, loving, kind man. I think he's a good friend of yours, but he runs on the operating system of a male that doesn't want to express emotions, of like a bro. Love you, bro. Austin, you boob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I love that guy.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. We both know the guy. He's an incredibly loving guy. You can see concern and love in his eyes, but he's still running under the patriarchal sort of societal structure of don't show emotions. Whenever you want to talk about your emotions, buddy, let's do it.
I think with him, it's one of these situations that it has to be right for him to be able to
where he's
going to feel safe and trusted.
For sure. For me, like, safety's been ripped away from me. I haven't had the luxury of being raised in a home that provided stability.
Okay.
And so I've learned that either I share it now or I could die tomorrow.
Well, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, to feel like, let's be open.
Carpe diem.
You know, yeah, seize the day. Let's do it.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have to have, you know, those outlets so we can take care of each other.
To answer the question, like, how do we get people to find healthy ways of, you know, dealing with mental health issues that are so rampant amongst men and amongst, you know, people of color, is brotherhood, having these conversations. I think that we need to build upon existing structures.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I do a lot of, like, music sharing because, like, in my culture, we express ourselves a lot through music and dance. Yeah. And that's helped just family of mine because I know they're the same way. And they've expressed to me, like, hey, bro, like, the family, a lot of them think you're crazy, but I think you're dope because you're just living your life the way you want to. So keep on, you know, trucking.
And I think more and more people will see that.
Yeah, it'll start.
Sometimes it takes time for everybody to see, no, not crazy.
Yeah.
I'm just living authentically.
Yeah.
And it's different.
Yeah.
You know? I think there's a lot has to change within just the mental health system that we have in place. I mean, my experience with my ex-wife, she is certainly not the person that I met. She, right after we separated, she had an incredible mental breakdown. Mm. And her schizophrenia just went over.
The paranoia, overdrive. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, where she was hearing voices and doing crazy things.
Was she on any sorts of drugs?
Nope.
Because that could be brought upon through meth. Like,
no.
Like, I have family members who've dabbled in meth heavily, and they've had psychotic breaks because of it.
No, I think it was all just, there's some mental health issues within our family.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so it kind of
pre-existing issues.
Pre-existing things. But I just think with the stress of the separation and
moving to a new state.
Yeah, I mean, and then this was a couple of years after we moved,
still.
You know, everything that was kind of coming down, I think she just broke.
Yeah.
Now, and she spent, there was a time where she was in and out of the hospital every other month.
Mm-hmm.
She'd spend 3 days here, a week here, two weeks there. And their whole idea of this whole system is, let's level up your chemicals in your brain, level you out, give you some meds, and get you out of here.
Yeah.
There's no real treatment.
Yeah, no.
Now, she's fortunate that her sister took it upon herself to the last time she just pushed and pushed and pushed and made sure that she got got the help. And she was essentially admitted into the hospital, a good portion of it inpatient and then a good portion of it outpatient, where she would be able to go home during the day and then come back at night, and then on the weekend she'd be at home and things like that.
Like a halfway house.
Yeah, to really make sure that she got everything taken care of. And ever since then, her medication has been good and things, and she's been leveled out, and she's been managing it like a champion.
Man. That's awesome.
But
that's good news.
It's just the system itself. Not everybody has that access. One, the ability and the patience and the fortitude to push like they had to.
Yeah. Honestly, I think it's a weird subject to bring up right here, but it's like, my people, colored people, brown and black people, aren't privileged enough.
That's another issue with it, though.
To have access and to have acceptance for mental health issues.
We need to have these doctors and these psychologists and psychiatrists that understand the culture.
We need people from our communities to become psychologists.
Yeah, communities and that are, or just people that know the culture and sympathize.
Exactly. Yeah.
And can identify.
I don't know,
man.
It's tough. I don't know. I disagree with that. I think you have to be from our communities.
But here's the thing.
Because how can you sympathize unless you've struggled the same?
I get that. But I read an article.
It's all
a study of a woman that was studying psychiatry.
Okay.
And she would be telling people, this is what I want to do. And there would be people that said, well, why do you want to work with those people?
Mm.
Why do you want to do that? That's a lost cause.
Mm.
She's black.
Mm.
And it was coming from her own people.
Mm.
You know, so there's
our
stigma.
Our own people suck.
Yeah, there's a stigma there.
It really
and that's what needs to be broken.
Yeah.
And you got
to
have.
We just need to speak about those voices. Our people are distracted with athletes and other things, you know what I mean? Instead of like actual You know what I mean? I don't know.
Some, yeah.
So I agree with you. I think, honestly, I don't know. I agree that people are people, and if someone wants to help a community, for sure help it. But I do think that we need representation from within the Absolutely. Community as well.
If I were coming into your community as a white guy, it would be harder for me to be able to do that than if it were, say, you doing it.
Yeah.
I would have to spend an incredible amount of time just be gaining adopted, trust
yeah.
and be adopted into the culture. And yeah. it, building that trust and having that community know that I'm not going to screw them over.
Yeah, we don't like snitches.
Yeah.
Because our community is so wild. You know what I mean? Like, we were talking about this before we started recording. Like, black and brown communities accept outbursts of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And we might have been talking while we're recording, but...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We don't call the cops on each other because...
No.
And, I mean...
There's no point.
Yeah, because...
You handle your own.
Yeah, because they could take away my life. They could kill me.
Yeah.
You know, they could kill my brother. And, like, yeah, in the past... Anyways. So, working with police officers isn't something that... our communities feel safe in doing, which is something that I think we need to address as well. Like, I think the police in the state should be from the communities, or if they're not from the communities, they should spend time with the communities
Absolutely.
And not feel like a outside force.
The officers need to have some sort of trust
relationship,
within the community
relationship, yeah.
and have that relationship. You know, absolutely. It's tough though.
It really is.
And it's going to take a while for that to come around because there's so much distrust. And rightfully so.
Yeah.
I mean, rightfully so.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had a cop coming around killing my family, yeah, I'm going to associate cops with killing my family.
Yeah.
I'm not going to trust that. Why would I trust that? It's not okay.
Yeah, it's different, man. It's really hard because I've lost friends, you know, friends that I've been able to be vulnerable with and, like, trust because of, like, our disagreements on police. And I see police as people,
yeah.
Just like I see a gangster as a person.
Mm-hmm.
I see somebody in red with a gun the same as I see, you know, a cop with a gun.
Yeah.
They both could end my life, right?
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of people are good. I think a lot of cops are good. And I think that they're people like the rest of us and they just want to get home. It's a job, right?
Yeah.
I honestly think the job is set up to keep people oppressed, though.
Can. I think part of it is that the cops just see so much shit.
Yeah, too. But so do I.
But that's also the job they chose.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, I don't want to say it's an excuse, but...
I don't know.
There needs to be better mental health for them, too.
Yeah, they do, for sure, man. Like, firefighters and police officers and, you know, like, our emergency, like...
Responders, they need,
especially even dispatchers as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, my ex-brother-in-law was a firefighter for a while. And he was incredibly suicidal for a while in his life. He was traumatized by some of the things he saw, some of the dead bodies, cadavers.
Oh, yeah.
For a while, he told every woman in his family, including my ex-wife, to not wear red nail polish because one of the bodies he cleaned up in the canyons was a woman with red nail polish. And it triggered him.
Wow. Yeah. There needs to be better mental health
for sure.
For all these people.
For everyone in general.
The system.
Especially for our first responders, because a cop's job is not easy, for sure. I'd hate being a cop.
No, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. But the mental health issue, it needs to be, one, more widely acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
That it's okay to go get it.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's okay that we go to the doctor for a cold and the flu and all these other things. Why not it be just as acceptable to go to a therapist or a psychiatrist to get help for our mental health? It's got to be something that's more widely available and more widely accepted.
I think there's a lot of people, especially in the colored communities, black and brown communities, specifically black musicians, that are pushing forward for like more acceptance of going to therapy. I teach myself and I learn a lot through music.
Mm-hmm.
So I see like the way the culture is moving, is shifting, is evolving
Good.
Through the music.
Yeah,
it produces.
We gotta evolve. You know, I think with that, I think the lessons that we kind of learned here is that let's be more authentic.
Yeah, let's do it.
And let's you know, if we need the help, let's reach out to each other. I mean,
I agree.
If we can't go to a therapist, let's reach out to at least each other.
Exactly. Yeah, I think one of the most beneficial things for me that has replaced therapy has just been able to be vulnerable with friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sometimes the best therapist is a friend and a couple beers and just being honest and vulnerable.
Absolutely. I hear you. Yeah, so we'll end it there.
Yeah.
And we'll do it again.
Let's do it again. Fun. Yeah, viva la raza, cabrones.